If there is a document, in my experience, if there is a document in the administrative record that looks like someone made what they call a bona fide attempt to seek rehearing, whatever it's called, however it's worded, handwritten by pro se, the jurisdictional hurdle will be viewed by the courts to have been met. But the content of the motion for rehearing is error preservation. It is not jurisdictional. I, as an assistant attorney general, won't, which I'm not here representing, I make my usual disclaimer, but lawyers for the state will not necessarily get your whole lawsuit dismissed because you haven't met a jurisdictional hurdle. But if you haven't preserved that error, and remember, the list of errors in the Administrative Procedure Act includes things like violates the statute, violates the Constitution. You need to preserve those legal arguments. I think we're on where, when, and how.
Yeah.
The government code, the APA, places venue in Travis County unless you have venue from somewhere else. Now, this is in the environmental world, so that's why you see the water code and the health and safety code. But you file your petition 30 days from the time that the order has been overruled, the motion for rehearing has been overruled by operation of law in Travis County. Pay attention to Chapter 10 of the local rules. One of the mistakes that I see private practitioners make is if they sometimes people have clients who are still mad and they want to keep all their doors open. So they file a suit for judicial review, and then they start negotiating with the landfill operator or the whatever, and people, you know, people get right with each other, and the case never goes anywhere, and Warren Vavra's staff finally dismisses it 2 years later for lack of prosecution or something, and it all goes away. But if you've got one of those, and the majority of them really intend to go forward, then think about when you file your petition for review, request assignment. As soon as you see an answer from the state so you know who's representing, do your letter to Judge Livingston. People who believe themselves to need injunctive relief and do not do that will be in a world of hurt, because under Chapter 10 of the local rules, the only thing the duty judge can do for you is a TRO. Cases that are appeals of contested case decisions have to be assigned to a specific judge, and they hear everything except a TRO.
That's a great point. Okay, so we're going to move forward a little bit to challenges, creative challenges to orders, and there's a clown here, so I want to warn everybody before I turn the slide over to that one. You know, when you're thinking about bringing a challenge to an administrative order, there's something about the enabling statute or the organic statute you don't like, you know, oftentimes practitioners will try one of these two things, particularly in Texas. The first thing they try is to repackage it as a claim under the Uniform Declaratory Judgment Act. And I think courts have gotten more restrictive about this and been more explicit that, you know, of course you can bring a UDJ claim to challenge the statute, but you don't really have this freestanding right for a declaration of your rights, and you can't really use it to, you know, as a collateral attack or a different way to attack an agency order that you don't like. Similarly, with the ultra vires claims, you know, those, you know, are outside the scope of sovereign immunity, because the theory behind the ultra vires claim is that the state actor has gone so far beyond their authority under the statute and outside their discretion that the court has the power to rein them back in because they've gone rogue, and therefore sovereign immunity is not impacted by that. The problem, though, when you're sort of trying to explain an agency action as an ultra vires action, is the difficulty of trying to explain to the court, you know, how this action is so far outside the agency's discretion or law that it really is an ultra vires claim and not just a different way to package an attack on the order. And so I think courts have been, you know, really wise in the last few years to say that, you know, even though we understand your challenge here, but, you know, this really sounds more like a complaint about the way the agency uses discretion and not really a way of saying that they're so far outside the discretion, they've actually got the actor in question is ultra-various, and therefore you can sidestep around sovereign immunity that way.
And another complicating matter in that is the fact that you can only seek prospective relief. That sounds pretty clear when you say it out loud, but when you start looking at the remedies people ask for, I've learned that you can characterize anything as prospective relief, right, and at the same time characterize it as retrospective relief. And I personally would like the Supreme Court to maybe weigh in on that at some point. But even Hecht and Heinrich noted that the difference between the two is, I think he used some expression like not being as clear as night and day, but that can be very difficult, and it's something that we've become more aware of at our court, at least I have and some of the other staff attorneys.
Yeah, absolutely.